What is a Boilermaker? It is one of the most unique nicknames in college sports. So unique, in fact, that many college sports fans, possibly even some Purdue followers, do not recognize the reference or its origins. To find the answer, we must return to the 19th century, the infancy of Purdue football. Imagine a time when Butler University, DePaul University, and Wabash College, all respected institutions of higher learning today, though none of them with a Division I football program, were considered the big three of college football in Indiana. Purdue's first game in 1887, its only game of that season, was a 48-6 loss to Butler. By 1891, however, fortunes were turning. Purdue traveled south to Crawfordsville to face Wabash, and a 44-0 victory earned the squad a new nickname. The Crawfordsville Daily Argus News reported the game christened Purdue's team with a headline both partisan and hyperbolic: "Slaughter of Innocents, Wabash Snowed Completely Under by the Burly Boilermakers from Purdue." The Lafayette Sunday Times embraced the derisive moniker. Quote, "As everyone knows, Purdue went down to Wabash last Saturday and defeated their 11. The Crawfordsville papers have not yet gotten over it. The only recourse they have is to claim that we beat their scientific men by brute force. Our players are characterized as coal heavers, boilermakers, and stevedores." That's from the opening chapter of 100 Things Purdue Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die by Tom Schott, with Nathan Baird, forwarded, by the way, by Robbie Hummel. Okay, so that title, 100 Things Purdue Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, is a bit alarming. I got to know and do all this stuff, all 100 of them, before I die, but calm down. Much of the lore and the urgings in this book are readily available to the ardent Purdue sports fan without too much strenuous activity. After all, that's why we watch sports, isn't it? Included within these 100 chapters are short biographies of some of Purdue's sport's greatest of all times. Pretty much all 100 of them, as the title alerts us. That said, there are indeed some things to do scattered here and there. Listen to a Purdue sports broadcast on radio. Take a ride on the Boilermaker Special, which, by the way, is always a hit at the West Lafayette Morton Center's Family Fun Days, which we hope to resurrect again in 2022. Places to go on campus for the die-hard Purdue sports fan. Urgings to hear the world's largest drum banged at a game. And take a photo in front of John Wooden's statue. Once I started reading through the book, I realized that younger fans in particular may not remember John Wooden's stellar basketball career at Purdue. Coach Joe Tiller and quarterback Drew Brees' amazing years with Purdue football. And Joe Barry Carroll's auspicious impact on Purdue basketball. Nor why Boilermakers, as we just heard, are called Boilermakers. And how special that the editors asked Robbie Hummel, that basketball great of not that long ago, to write the foreword. So most any Purdue sports fan is going to read the introduction to this book. And like so many who have spoken on or written about Purdue's men's athletics, Hummel has nothing but good things to say about the basketball program and about Coach Matt Painter in particular. Presuming you too are a fan of Purdue sports, you will be roused for more Purdue sports lore by the time you finish Mr. Hummel's opening words. And those opening words go something like this. What an honor to be asked to write the foreword for a book that chronicles the top 100 things about Purdue athletics. And to be included as one of the chapters, I am truly humbled. While there are accounts of great games and anecdotes about subjects pertaining to the university and the greater Lafayette area, most of the stories in this book are about people. That's not surprising, especially to anyone who is associated with Boilermakers, because people are what make Purdue such a special place. To me, that sums up what this book is all about. Robbie Hummel writing about and introducing us to 100 things Purdue fans should know and do before they die. And yes, it's interesting, isn't it, that the term Purdue fans intimates sports fans. If you're a fan of Purdue's stellar academics, many alumni activities, or sometimes really interesting architecture, to name a few options, you'll have to cool your jets and content yourself with learning a bit more about athletics here. One more note. While the opening pages are clearly interested in the successful season of both men's and women's sports at Purdue, you'll have to wait until entry number 17 when basketball star Stephanie White makes an appearance, and then check out chapters 51, 59, 80 to read about a female star, Lynn Dunn, coach of the successful women's basketball team in the 1990s. For yes, there are women athletes in this book. There are also the occasional track and field star, diving phenom, and volleyball call-out. But it is the male Purdue sports stars that shine most brightly in this book. This is very much a Purdue men's football, basketball kind of book. So, not surprising that the position of football quarterback is deemed in one chapter, quote, the most glamorous position in sports, end quote, in basketball-crazed Indiana, of all places. I think, much to its credit, 100 Things Purdue Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die may start with a contemporary standout basketball star, Robbie Hummel, but the reach of the book is deep in years, touching back to the first half of the 20th century and even into the late 19th century. 100 Things Purdue Fans Ought to Do Before They Die doesn't shine its spotlight only on athletes of today. Cradle of Quarterbacks, that chapter, is a good example. We do indeed delve way back into the beginning of Purdue football, learn about some names that maybe you've heard of but don't know that much about, and then jump forward into the contemporary world as well. In terms of looking at the history of Purdue athletics, it's a good book to pick up. If you're looking for controversy or naysaying or even carping about this or that coach or that player or goodness knows that sports era, you'll need to look elsewhere. Purdue fans, it seems, have no time for complaining or holding grudges. And that said, those folks who did not become the winningest or whatever sport they took up won't necessarily be noted in these pages. And with its emphasis on statistics, especially winning statistics, it's a popular world of sports writing that is perhaps just as well. If you're into what the best sports teams of Purdue were, this is your kind of book. I want to wrap up by reading something from a chapter about Joe Barry Carroll, a fellow who continues to take an active interest in the West Lafayette community and in Purdue, even though he has moved on from his really incredible basketball career and gone on to quite a professional change in careers in Atlanta. The chapter on Joe Barry Carroll, chapter number 71, starts and ends with these words. The story is a common one, not only throughout Purdue basketball history, but in all of college sports. Coach goes on a recruiting trip to see one player and ends up chasing after someone different. When Purdue assistant coach George Faber went on a scouting trip to Denver in the mid-1970s, he wasn't there to scout Joe Barry Carroll. The 7-foot-1 phenom was hard to miss, however, and his arrival eventually changed Boilermaker history. Quote, it was a great time, Carroll said, and I'm grateful for it, end quote. In 1976-77, Carroll made an immediate impact as a first-year reserve behind Tom Scheffler, setting the school freshman record for blocked shots 82 that has withstood recent challenges from A.J. Hammonds and Matt Harms. He helped the Boilermakers secure their second NCAA tournament invitation. What followed were perhaps the two greatest big man seasons in the history of a program with a reputation for producing them. We're talking just a couple of years later. Carroll's 22.8 points per game led the Big Ten. His 352 rebounds set a Purdue season record that stood until Caleb Swanigan came along. With Carroll dominating inside, the Boilermakers rose to as high as number 13 in the nation. His career high of 42 points came in the NIT semifinals, leading to an 87-68 victory over Alabama and setting up a championship match with intrastate rival Indiana. Both Carroll and Purdue rode the momentum of that season to even greater heights in 1979 and 1980, when Carroll averaged 22.3 points and 9.2 rebounds as the focal point of every opponent's scouting report. Carroll's achievements continued after retiring basketball in the early 1990s. Now living in Atlanta, he works as a wealth advisor and an artist and an author. I'm glad to say I had the opportunity to review one of Mr. Carroll's books. Quite a good read, if you want to go back and check that one out. "We all have something inside of us," said Carroll, who was inducted into the Purdue Intercollegiate Athletics Hall of Fame in 1995. Quote, "We usually stop at the first good thing we do, the first thing we're good at, the first thing that pays well. But there's all these other things we don't get a chance to explore," end quote. Well, as life will have it, Joe Barry Carroll certainly went on to explore many of those other things. As the book just told us, he now works in Atlanta as a wealth advisor. He's a standout artist and quite a good author as well, someone I hope you get to catch up on. It's that kind of biography. It's that kind of inclusion of both statistics, because sports fans love statistics, and also something about the people involved, whether it's Stephanie White or Joe Barry Carroll or Drew Brees. You can learn some interesting anecdotal and also insightful things about all these personalities at Purdue. 100 Things Purdue Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, by Tom Schott, with Nathan Baird, introduced by Robbie Hummel. It's available at all of our fine local public libraries, because who wouldn't want to have this book on their shelves? And certainly at the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening.